Nights tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark LeVillier. True history in this hour. Later on, the Hallmark Playhouse with the autobiography of Will Rogers. But first, an episode of An American Gallery, produced by NBC and later rebroadcast via Armed Forces Radio in the mid-60s.
To introduce this episode of An American Gallery, here is Lorne Green.
America has 9 national memorials. They're as varied in their appearance as the history they honor. The last of the 9 is carved on a 6,200-foot granite mountain in the Black Hills of South Dakota. It's known both as the Four Faces and, more properly, Mount Rushmore. It was sculpted by an American genius named John Gutzon Borglum, and the beauty of its mass promises to last an eternity as a monument to the American ideal. This, then, is the story of 2 giants, Borglum, the sculptor, and Mount Rushmore, one of our national memorials.
John Gutzon Borglum, sculptor, saluted this week on An American Gallery. Ed Begley stars as Gutzon Borglum in A Story of 2 Giants.
All right, Lincoln. Hit it like the babe would. Here she comes. My fastball.
Home run, Dad. Home run.
Good hit, son. All right, Babe Ruth. Come and help me find the ball in these shrubs.
Did you see it sail, Dad? I'm hitting almost as good as you.
But you'll have to admit, your old man still pitches better. Right, Lincoln?
Oh, sure. But you play professional ball.
Lincoln, since you're now 12 years old...
12 and a half.
I think it's time I made a confession. I never played professional ball. I mean, you know as well as I do I was born in Iowa. Now, what teams does Iowa have in the National or American League?
None, Dad. Not a single one.
You see, son, sometimes a father who spends all his time carving statues likes to be the kind of hero his son can look up to.
So you made up the story about playing professional ball.
Oh, yes. You're not disappointed?
I haven't been for about 3 years. Ever since I found out that the Yankees come from New York and not Iowa.
You devil, you. Get out of here. Oh, no, never mind. Never mind. We've got a brand new baseball to find.
Yes, sir.
Next, you'll be telling me about the birds and the bees.
Dad, something fell out of your pocket.
Huh?
I got it. It's a telegram.
Oh, yes, I meant to read that. August 20th, 1924. Huh? South Dakota.
That's a state, Dad.
I know it's a state, Lincoln. It's just that I don't get many telegrams from South Dakota.
There's a North Dakota, too.
Look for the ball. Dear Mr. Borglum, by way of brief introduction, I am historian for the state of South Dakota. Good for you. In my opinion, our Black Hills offer unique opportunity for heroic sculpture of unusual character. Would it be possible for you to design and supervise a massive sculpture there?
Are we going to South Dakota?
That ball cost me 75 cents. Find it. The proposal has not passed beyond the mere suggestion, but if it be possible for you to undertake the matter, I feel quite sure we could arrange to finance such an enterprise. Yours, Doan Robinson. 23 Skidoo.
We're going, I can tell.
This could be the ball game, the pennant, the series. Heroic sculpture. I've seen those hills, son, and this man Robinson is right. Now, run and tell your mother to change her canning schedule and to start thinking about what to pack for South Dakota. Watch your step there, Lincoln.
I'm okay, Dad.
And I'm not much of a geologist, Mr. Borglum, but they tell me most of these mountaintops are granite. Good for sculpting.
What's this area called, Mr. Robinson?
That's the Harley Range. These sharp granite shafts are called the Needles.
Breathtaking. God's own sculpture.
Mm-hmm. Question is, Mr. Borglum, are you sculptor enough to compete with him?
He is, sir.
You're both talking blasphemy.
Yes, yes. Perhaps compete was the wrong word, but we do need an artist big enough to handle this project.
As I recall, it was you who sent me the telegram.
My mom says Dad's a genius when it comes to the emotional value of volume.
Tell the man what that means, Lincoln.
He loves me.
I know what it means. Mr. Borglum, I should point out, it's not I who am concerned. Many important people, including Senator Norbeck, are concerned that you damage the beauty of these needles.
Robinson, famous I'm not. Michelangelo I'm not, nor am I a man of destruction. These needles, they're like cathedrals. No, I wouldn't carve here.
Hmm?
But there, on the next range.
Mount Rushmore?
Whatever you call it. We should look around there.
Dad, I'm getting cold.
Well, here. Stand close to me.
No, the weather in this altitude isn't entirely hospitable. You'd only be able to work from, say, spring to November, or perhaps December.
I always felt the bear knew what he was doing when he hibernated in the winter.
You know, I was thinking, perhaps a great sculpting of an Indian.
Oh, don't be so provincial, Mr. Robinson. Well, granted, art in America should be American, drawn from American sources, memorializing American achievement, but an Indian isn't enough. This must depict the spirit, the ideals of our geographical expansion, our political development.
Well, you have a concept?
Well, not yet, but... Well, we'll have to make surveys. We'll need around $10,000 to begin with. You think that... Oh, we're not alone.
What? I don't believe it. Myra Jackson.
What's a Myra Jackson?
Our enemy. Wife of a local newspaper editor. She has everyone convinced that sculptors are butchers out to carve up these needles.
Oh, you look surprised, Mr. Robinson.
Oh, well, I...
To me, climbing these hills is like a preview of an ascent to heaven.
Save us, dear Lord.
Good morning, Myra. May I present Mr. Gutson Borglum and his son, Lincoln?
Oh, Mr. Borglum, I'm here representing those people of South Dakota who will not have you disturbing one of God's miracles.
Mrs. Jackson, it would seem that one of God's miracles already seems disturbed.
It's apparent, Mr. Borglum. You consider me some kind of an unnecessary irritant to your carving plan.
On the contrary, Mrs. Jackson, you're quite necessary. For without the likes of you, how could we ever gauge what a horrible example can be?
Mr. Robinson, is this the kind of man...
It's the altitude, Myra. Mr. Borglum is unaccustomed to it.
Nonsense. I take to heights like an eagle.
Or a vulture.
She topped you, Dad.
Shut up.
Now, we're all being a little premature.
Or immature.
You're even now.
Shut up, I said.
My husband will fight this scheme all the way. The power of the press
dwindles in your awesome shadow, Mrs. Jackson. Have you ever considered dieting?
I've heard quite enough. But I assure you, Mr. Borglum, you've heard nothing yet.
Wow. And I thought my teacher had fat lips.
Lincoln, that's no way to talk about a lady.
But I thought you didn't like her.
I'm talking about your teacher.
Well, Mr. Borglum, you've met the first obstacle.
Yes. Well, she's right, you know.
What?
About the needles. As I said before, we can't touch them. But that Rushmore, it looks ideal. Well, let's not tell her I agree in principle. She might grow to like me, and that would be positively unbearable.
I just heard. They passed it.
Jesse, don't you realize I'm taking a bath?
Well, of course. Sculpting's messy work. But...
I relish privacy. I am naked.
So are half of your statues. Gutson, did you hear what
I am flesh and blood.
I'll get you a fig leaf. Gutson, in the name of heaven, listen to me. They passed the bill.
What bill?
What bill? What bill, he asked.
Exactly.
The bill. South Dakota.
Oh?
The Senator Norbeck. Who got Senator Williamson to introduce the bill in Congress so that giant statues could be carved in the Harney National Forest?
They passed it?
It became law yesterday, March 23rd, 1925.
Then we've got the money.
Well, not exactly. And we don't even know if it is we.
My dear friend, since you have me trapped in this tub with my bare essentials, will you have the decency to unfurl the red tape you're hinting at?
The measure calls for plans being submitted to the Commission on Fine Arts.
No. I know what that commission would do with the ideas I have brewing. Next.
The South Dakota State Legislature. There'll be a problem because the bill calls for them to appropriate $10,000.
What else?
Well, Governor Gunderson is against it.
So we're no closer than we were a year ago.
Senator Norbeck thinks the state legislature might go for $5,000.
Those parsimonious Black Hill billies. Fat chance. Well... The anti-Borglum bandwagon seems to be stretching halfway across the continent. Which reminds me, What do you mean, we don't even know if it's we?
Well, the sculptor wasn't specified in the legislation.
And Michelangelo thought he had problems.
Well, maybe if you were more specific with your ideas and talked with Robinson or Norbeck, you could give them new ammunition, new inspiration.
You may be right, Jesse. Let me think about it.
Dad, Mom said the clean towels weren't dry yet. You have to use the one here.
Well, no matter, Lincoln. I may just stay here, go on a bathtub strike, remain submerged until the right people realize our nation needs fewer flappers and more monuments.
Gutson, I found a clean towel.
Well, don't just stand there, dear. Come on in. I think we've got enough now for a game of Mahjong.
Well, I'm afraid we're fighting a losing battle, Borglum.
Right on one count, wrong on the other.
Hmm?
We're fighting, yes, but a battle isn't lost until it's over.
No, I can't decide whether you're stubborn or dedicated.
I'm both, Robinson. This is the mightiest nation in the world, and we don't have a monument bigger than a snuff box. This American civilization is expanding, exploding. It demands an enlarged dimension, a whole new scale. Our monument should announce to the whole world the character, the vitality, the dynamics of our philosophy. A monument's dimension should be determined by the importance to civilization of the events commemorated, not by the parochial leanings of some state legislators and a Myra Jackson.
Which brings us to the events commemorated. When you called, you said you knew whom you wanted on Rushmore.
Yes, four men. A memorial to the builders of this nation. Washington, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
No one man contributed more to our independence than Jefferson. You see why, don't you? He's symbolic of our continental growth.
Yes, his purchase of the Louisiana Territory.
The kind of expansion that's made us big enough to defend our freedom.
Well, I can't imagine much argument there.
And will anyone argue with Lincoln? He preserved this union.
And the fourth?
Theodore Roosevelt.
Uh-oh, now that could give us problems.
Robinson, with the Panama Canal, he made us an ocean-to-ocean republic. He fought for the highest standards of political morality.
And Senator Norbeck suggested him because he approved of Roosevelt's trust-busting activities, and Roosevelt once lived on a ranch in Dakota.
You're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. I would never have thought of Roosevelt if Norbeck hadn't suggested him. Mostly because I fell into the common trap of ruling out a monument to anyone who died so recently. But that's the kind of hogwash I heard as a kid in Iowa. Who says we have to wait a century before we can honor the memory of a great man? Who says we have to wait a decade, a year, a day?
No one.
Who? You have a way of stopping an argument before I can start one.
Oh, how can I argue with you when I feel I failed you?
Failed me?
Yes, I failed the artist. I proposed the idea, and I failed to come up with the money.
You've only been at it a year and a half.
And you're past 60.
At my age, Michelangelo had 30 years of carving left in him.
Yeah, well, I just pray that marble dust is the secret to longevity. Because even with these new incentives you've given me, I still see a delay of at least a year before we can get our financing.
Well, it won't be a wasted year. I'm going to make some crude measurements at Rushmore and do some preliminary marbles.
Oh, and there's another thing. I happen to be older than you, and Norbeck's older than the both of us.
I'll send you each some marble dust. Oh, you. This is a celebration, Robinson. You seem so reflective.
Oh, I was recalling that night 2 years ago when we were driving along together.
And you decided you had failed me.
Yeah, I sometimes think I still have.
Are you forgetting the reason Senator Norbeck is giving this party?
Oh, well, hardly. But getting the federal government to allot $250,000 is only half the battle.
A very impressive half, Robinson.
Well,
I believe the saying is, that's good for openers.
Openers like that, and I'd fold with four aces.
You know, the mayor of one of our Black Hills towns felt certain that he'd raised $15,000 by last month.
Well?
You know how much he got? $1,900.
This is a party, gentlemen. You're supposed to mingle.
Oh, and it's a wonderful party, Senator. You know Major Jesse Tucker, Mr. Borglum's assistant and engineer?
A pleasure, sir.
How do you do?
But if you think I'm going to stand here and talk about statues when some of the prettiest girls in the Dakotas are here...
As well as our wives have all found themselves dancing partners.
Mm-hmm. Turnabout is fair play.
And now that's a good quote so long as women aren't involved.
Well, since I can't persuade you, I might as well tell you the good news I received a few hours ago.
Well, now, go slowly, Senator. We're very unaccustomed to good news.
Yes.
President Coolidge has decided to spend the summer here in the Black Hills.
Oh, that's marvelous.
That is good news.
Why? Is he good with a chisel?
Well, as you know, Senator, Mr. Borglum has no patience with the politics of the problem.
Gutson, don't you see? His presence here will focus the whole nation's attention to the Black Hills.
Mm-hmm. Inevitably, Mount Rushmore has to be publicized, you know.
Publicity. The secret behind fundraising.
Of course. I personally offered to do a bust of him or strike a medal. It's just so blamed infuriating to realize what we have to go through to give dimension to a dream.
you may have to go through a little more.
Hmm? Oh, Senator Novak! Oh, what a perfectly charming party! Oh, I don't think I've ever met... you.
Mrs. Jackson, I retain the right to be me. Perhaps you can persuade your newspaper husband to go on a crusade against that.
It may not be necessary, in view of the fact that you have only half the budget your monstrous project requires.
Some new guests have just arrived. If you'll excuse me.
May I propose that the hatchet be buried?
And may I propose where we bury it? You never did go on that diet, Mrs. Jackson.
I think my wife is calling me. Coming, dear. Excuse me.
Jesse never could stand the sight of blood.
I've been wondering, Mr. Borglum.
Glum.
Yes. I've been wondering, with only half the money, are we to have a Washington with only one eye, a Lincoln with one ear, etc., etc., etc.?
Robinson, this is a frightful decade for prohibition to be the law of the land.
Perhaps, Mrs. Jackson, you haven't heard the good news.
Good news? What good news?
President Coolidge is summering here. And it's while he's honoring us with his presence that the first drilling on Mount Rushmore will begin. The four faces are virtually a reality.
I didn't know.
Yeah, you look pale, Mrs. Jackson. May I get you a punch?
I think she's just had one. Right in the solar plexus.
Borglum, a very happy new year to you. May 1928 see the beginning of both our dreams.
I'll drink to that. I think I can finish Washington before the year is out.
We still have a problem. The federal funds, while they were voted in, the funds themselves haven't been authorized.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you, members of the Mount Rushmore National Memorial Commission, to my humble log cabin studio. As you know, rather appropriately, it was on Washington's birthday, February 22nd, 1929, that funds were provided so I can carry on with the memorial. Now, I'd like to direct your attention to the picture window over here. Lincoln, would you draw back the blinds, please? As you can see, the face of Washington is beginning to emerge. I think, gentlemen, if you can, the face is the dimensions of a five-story building carved on a mountain peak where clouds fold about them like a great scarf and the moon hides behind a lock of hair. If I can discover these faces of Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Roosevelt within that mountain, they will, according to geologists, remain to tell the story of America for the next 5 million years. That, I pray God, will be my legacy to America.
This 4th of July, 1930, will not only be a memorable one for those of us here gathered to dedicate this first to the four faces on Mount Rushmore, George Washington, but the very soul of this moment will here linger to be sensed by the millions who in time will come to view this cultural wonder. The authority of the Congress to carve colossal portraits of these great men in the granite of the Black Hills has created a perpetual shrine for political democracy.
Where? On Washington's nose.
What about it?
A promise to
somebody
all
is
America.
Climbing down Washington.
A promise to
the glory
of our great nation will withstand the ravages of time.
My daughter.
Gutson. It's New Year's Eve. You shouldn't be sitting there just staring out into the blackness.
Yeah, it's too cold to work. It's against the law to get drunk. And Lincoln is sparking with that girl.
Well, dear, he is 20 years old.
But did it have to be Myra Jackson's daughter?
Oh, things aren't all that bad. They've built a beautiful scenic road so that people can view the monument. Lincoln's working with you now and doing so well. The benefit concert that Mary Garden did in Rapid City has helped a lot in the financing.
Mary, this is 1932, or it will be in a few hours. Depression. That'll be the key word this year. Things were so bad last year, I had to put my own money in to keep things going. What do you think it's going to be like this year?
Slow, perhaps. But it will be done. I know it.
I'd just like to live to see it. Well, Lincoln, your eyes are better than mine.
Perfect. Yes, it's perfect. Here, Dad, take the binoculars.
All that waste because of one engineer who wouldn't listen to me.
Jefferson's head could have been finished instead of just starting.
Bigger charges, he said. Bigger charges and we can move faster. That pompous fool. He blew 20 feet off of Jefferson's forehead. The minute I turned my back, he had to prove his point. Can't these men on the dynamite understand, Lincoln? Once rock is blasted away, it's gone forever. From now on, no more chances.
Well, it seemed to me to go all right.
It's easy to destroy beauty, Robinson. Mm.
Didn't expect to see you here today, Mr. Robinson.
Well, I come in my usual capacity.
We're out of money.
I once read the human animal was very adaptable. I think you'd be used to that by now, Borglum.
What's the matter with people? You'd think culture was a dirty word. Now, there must be enough blood in the national turnip to pay the workers we need here. Don't they realize that in the last 12 months alone, 150,000 people came to view this unfinished work?
Aren't you on something of a speaking basis with President Roosevelt? Why don't you go and talk to him?
What do I say? How about you and Eleanor dipping into the household budget, Franklin, old
boy? Point out to him that this is not merely a South Dakota project. It's a national project.
That's true, Dad.
Oh, and there's Alvin Barkley. Yeah, he's a good friend of yours.
Well?
If you can get the president, Senator Barkley, and a few more enthused about this, and with Norbeck's determination to see this thing through, I'm certain that we'll get another federal grant.
All right. I'll try.
Good.
But I'm not going after a grant that has to be matched with private funds because they just don't exist.
Well, now, wait, I think that's possible. There's always hope.
Lincoln, you want to make the trip with me?
Well, I think I can do more good here.
I know. You wouldn't want to be that far away from the Jackson girl.
Her? Well, we broke up months ago.
Well, Robinson, you're right. There is always hope.
Ladies and gentlemen, on this 30th day of August, 1936, we're broadcasting to you directly from the site of Mount Rushmore, where in just moments, the second of the four faces will be dedicated by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It's a setting of spectacular beauty. A 70-foot American flag is draped over the mountain, covering the now completed face of Thomas Jefferson. To one side is the Washington face, and to the other, we can already recognize the Lincoln face, which will probably be dedicated in another year or two. We're situated 1,500 feet below the top of Mount Rushmore. About 100 feet from where I'm broadcasting, the great sculptor of this monumental work, John Gutzon Borglum, is standing with his lovely daughter. She's holding a small American flag. And yes, now she's waving it toward the top of the mountain, where Borglum's son and assistant, Lincoln Borglum, has been awaiting the signal. Any second now, he should... There it is! And I'm sure you all heard it. Lincoln Borglum has set off one of the great blasts needed to start work on the Theodore Roosevelt face. And now, there's a cloud of dust settling in the valley. And there it is. The huge flak is being swung away, and we can see the Jefferson face.
Pull. Just how long has it been now, Robinson?
Let me see. We dedicated the Lincoln head in September of 1738. It's right to recall.
I think it was 38.
And then Teddy Roosevelt in the... what month was that, Lincoln?
July 2nd, 1939.
Yeah, it's about 2 years ago. I quit counting the years and I reached my 80th birthday.
Now, don't you worry while I'm gone, Robinson. Lincoln knows as much about polishing the heads as I do. He'll put on the finishing touches before the year is out.
We're still just a milk run. Better get you on that train, Dad.
Coming. I wonder if that geologist was right.
Huh? What geologist?
The one who said the memorial should last 5 million years.
Come on, Dad. Come on. Up you go.
All right. I'm on. Here. Give me my bags.
Here you are.
Now, do you mind what I taught you, son? Just you remember that my legacy you're polishing has to last 5 million years. 1 million years from now, who's going to care how long it took you to polish Teddy Roosevelt's mustache? So do it right, son. Do it right.
Well, now, the least he could have done was say goodbye.
I think he was afraid to.
You know something about this Chicago trip I don't?
It's for an operation. Oh, it's nothing major. If he feels, he'll never live through it. But the memorial will be finished. And it will be a monument to my father's greatness, as well as to the greatness of our nation.
Borglum's own words can best conclude this tribute. In 1940, when as many as 10,000 people in a day came to admire his story of the growth and expansion of our nation, he wrote, "My dream has come true. There on the mountaintop, as near to heaven as we could make it, we've carved portraits of our leaders that posterity and civilization may see hundreds of thousands of years hence what manner of men our leaders were, with a prayer and a belief that there, among the clouds, they may stand forever, where wind and rain alone shall wear them away."
You have been listening to another portrait in an American gallery. Today, John Gutzon Borglum, sculptor, starring Ed Begley as Gutzon Borglum. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
An American Gallery on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from the Armed Forces Radio Service broadcast in 1968. Not too much radio drama on the air during that year, though one notable series, which is still enjoyed to this day, called The Black Mass, a horror series created by Jack Nessel and featuring stories by such writers as H.P. Lovecraft. You're listening to An Hour of True History on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeFonier. Now, the Hallmark Playhouse takes on the autobiography of Will Rogers in the CBS episode from February 23, 1950.
Remember, a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. Tonight, from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you the autobiography of Will Rogers, edited by Donald Day, starring Edward Arnold with Will Rogers Jr. on the Hallmark Playhouse. Each week, Hallmark will bring you Hollywood's greatest stars in outstanding stories chosen by one of the world's best-known authors, the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. Tonight on our Hallmark Playhouse, I shall share with you the pleasure of hearing again some of the wisest and wittiest words that have been spoken in our lifetime. A great American spoke them. His name was Will Rogers, and here with us tonight is his son, Will Rogers. Will, your father's remarks are a part of American literature, and I can't tell you how honored we all feel to have you here tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Hilton. You know, my father always said that he hoped no man would write his biography. But in looking over his material, we discovered he'd actually written his own. And I'm glad you're going to tell it here tonight on the Hallmark Playhouse.
So are we, Will. And to help us tell it, we are fortunate to have with us one of Hollywood's most distinguished actors and one who knew Will Rogers very well indeed, Edward Arnold.
Listen to the legend of a man who loved to laugh.
My ancestors didn't exactly come over in the Mayflower, but they met the boat.
You are about to hear some words that America once loved. They were spoken by a long, lanky cowboy who ambled out of the West one day. Not so good-looking as some, better-looking than others. Pretty average-looking on the whole. He rode out of the West twirling a rope with a wad of gum in his jaw and a grin on his face. He was laughing the first time anyone got a good look at him. And he was laughing the last time anyone saw him. He laughed at everything and everybody. And he taught America to laugh at herself.
The national budget is a mythical beanbag. Congress votes mythical beans into it and then tries to reach in and pull real beans out. A Democrat would rather make a speech than make a dollar. Politics is the best show in America, but always remember this, that as bad as we sometimes think our government is run, it's the best run I ever saw.
Will was born on the last frontier as it was passing out of existence. At his very doorstep, a miracle was taking form and semblance. Out of sweat and steel and horse flesh and men's dreams and men's angers, a continent was being conquered and a nation built. In no time at all, as time is reckoned in the lives of nations. He watched it grow and grew with it. In his veins, the blood of the white man mingled with the blood of the Cherokee. In his heart, the dreams and loves of the white man mingled with the dreams and the loves of the Cherokee. His was an eager spirit, mentally and physically on the move, and yet his feet were always planted firmly in the soil from which he came. He was born on a ranch in the heart of Oklahoma's Indian Territory. He had this to say about it.
There's nothing of which I'm more proud than my Cherokee blood.
Almost as soon as Will could hold a rope, he was learning to do tricks with it. During the hot, lazy Oklahoma afternoons when he was supposed to be in the schoolroom, he was out in some shady spot lassoing every human and animal that was luckless enough to pass by. In desperation, his father finally decided to send him to military school in Missouri. Will arrived there in 1897, dressed in a 10-gallon hat, with the tops of his trousers tucked in his high-heeled red-top boots. His luggage consisted mainly of carefully coiled ropes. He was in trouble almost as soon as he got there.
My dear Mr. Rogers, I very much regret that I am forced to write you that you will have to make immediate plans to remove your son, William Rogers, to another school. We have tried very hard to make a military man of him, but we have been unable to convince him that a soldier carries a gun and not a lariat. Last night he lassoed our statue of Diana, the goddess of the hunt, off the top of the water fountain and demolished it completely. A bill is enclosed. This morning he lassoed his history instructor. The instructor was not seriously injured, so we are not enclosing a bill. However, please contact the school immediately with regard to what arrangements you wish to make.
Roger! Confound it! Help someone! Help! I've been lassoed!
Well, it wasn't long after this that Will and school education gave each other up by mutual agreement. Then Will got some traveling in under his belt. He spent time in Argentina as a cowboy. He joined a circus in South Africa and became known as the Cherokee Kid. He took in New Zealand and Australia. And at a racing meet in Australia, he tried out a trick that met with great favor. While his horse was streaking across the field, he leaned back over the horse's rump and picked up three handkerchiefs from the ground. Will never forgot the way the applause sounded that day in Australia. A few moments after he performed the stunt, a man came up to him.
Mr. Rogers.
That's me.
I'm from the Governor General's party, Mr. Rogers. The Governor General admired that last trick you did. He requested me to pay you his compliments and asked you if you would be kind enough to do the trick again.
Yeah, no? Well.
You will favor the Governor General, of course?
Sure, I'll favor him. For $150. What?
$150? You want $150?
Do you think the Governor General will think $150 is too much?
Yes, I most certainly do think the Governor General will think $150 is too much.
All right. You tell the Governor General if he'll do it cheaper, I'll loan him my horse and handkerchief.
Chance had taken Will Rogers into the show business. And when he arrived home from abroad, he started touring America with the so-called Wild West shows. On November 25th, 1908, he married Betty Blake of Rogers, Arkansas. This is what Will had to say about that.
When I wrote her, that was the star performance of my life.
In 1915, Will Rogers went to work for Florence Ziegfeld. Every night he would come out twirling his rope and start talking. He would stand up there on that stage, grinning across the footlights at America. And America would sit in the orchestra and the balcony and the boxes and grin right back at him. It was love at first sight. He was as real as a mule wiggling its ears on a hot summer day. Will was the first performer in theatrical history to base his humor on the affairs of the day. He always said he couldn't run out of jokes, that all he had to do to get laughs was to watch Congress and report the facts.
I read in the papers that we have two holidays of equal importance in the same week. Halloween and the congressional elections. And of the two, election provides us the most fun. On Halloween, they put pumpkins on their heads, and on election, they don't have to.
It was also in 1915 that Will played for President Wilson. He was the least known member of the entire cast, and his act consisted of kidding some of the president's policies. There was no way of knowing how the president would react to that, and Will was frank to admit that he was scared to death to go on.
Yes?
5 minutes, Mr. Rogers.
5 minutes? Is that all?
Yep. You die in 5 more minutes for kidding your country.
How's the show going?
Great, so far. The theater's full of plainclothesmen, though. You better watch what you say. Wouldn't want any of them to take a shot at you.
They wouldn't shoot an actor on the stage, would they?
Well, you never can tell.
No, I suppose not. You know what I wish? I wish I was back in Claremore, Oklahoma.
Yeah? Well, you may be.
Will walked into the wings. In his state of nerves, he imagined that the other performers watched him pass with great pity. He walked out on the stage like a man taking the last steps of the last mile.
I'm kind of nervous here tonight. I see where they've captured Pancho Villa in Mexico. Yeah, they got him in the morning editions, and the afternoon ones let him get away. We chased him over the line 5 miles, but ran into a lot of government red tape and had to come back.
There was a pause. The man on the stage and the entire audience looked anxiously up at the presidential box. And then from the box came a comforting, wonderful, reassuring sound. The President of the United States was laughing. And then the entire audience and the man on the stage burst into gales of laughter. But the man on the stage heard only the laughter of the man in the box. And the laughter of that man in the box reached across the theater to the man on the stage like a hand clasp. The same sly humor that had been his passkey to the heart of America had been Will Rogers' passkey to the heart of America's president.
Half our life is spent trying to find something to do with the time we have rushed through life trying to save.
you are listening to Words That America Once Loved. They were spoken on the stage, printed in the newspapers, heard and quoted on the radio. As the years passed, Will Rogers became the number one entertainer, newspaper columnist, after-dinner speaker, and lecturer in the United States. And what was even more important, he became also, without a doubt, first of all of these, in the hearts of his countrymen. He made his first movie, Laughing Bill Hyde, in 1918. And in 1919, he received his first fan letter. A movie fan sent him 25 cents in stamps to pay for a photograph. Will was astounded.
My dear sir, I thank you for the use of your money. I haven't got a picture of myself. If I did have it, wouldn't be worth 2 bits. In fact, if I had one, I'd give you 2 bits to keep it. Yours, Will Rogers.
Remember 1924? Republicanism rode high. The Saturday Evening Post printed the gospel. General Pershing was retired on half pay. Walter Johnson zoomed his first ball over. A lot of the newspapers were screaming heatedly, "Keep cool with Coolidge." Stocks were rising like toy balloons. Woodrow Wilson died.
What he stood for and died for will be strived after for years. The world has lost a friend. The theater has lost its greatest supporter. And I have lost the most distinguished person who ever laughed at my little nonsensical jokes. I look forward to it every year. Now I've only to look back on it as my greatest memory. It's great to be great. But it's greater to be human.
Curtains went up, went down. Newspapers went to press, and on the first pages of many of the leading papers appeared a box with Will Rogers' comments on the day's headlines. Time and tide brought their daily changes and his comments on those changes. The market crashed. Some of the rich became poor, and some of the poor became rich. Presidents and congresses came and went, and Will watched what was going on. Nudged America in the ribs and said, "Hey, did you ever stop to think about this?"
The Lord put millions of people all over the earth. They don't all agree on how they got there, and 90% don't care. But he was pretty wise when he did see to it that they all do agree on one thing. And that is, the better lives you live, the better you finish. The nation never looked like it was facing a worse winter. Birds, geese, Democrats, and all perishable animals are already huddling up in 3 or 4 states down south. We're at peace with the world because the world is waiting to get another gun and get it loaded. Today, I read a speech that Franklin Roosevelt made that just about threw him in the ring as the next Democratic candidate. The Democratic Party has some of the finest men as candidates that we have in this country. And it's a shame that they are to be eternally handicapped by being right but never present. To President-elect Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Warm Springs, Georgia. Congratulations on your election. Don't worry too much. A smile in the White House again will look like a meal to us.
Will Rogers loved the earth. He loved to lope across it on horseback, with the wind in his face and the rhythm of his pony's feet in tune with the rhythm of his heart. He loved the musical leathery sighs of a good saddle and the thin cry of a rope whistling through the air. He loved campfires, sitting around them in silent communication with good friends, watching the flames leap higher and higher into the dark, and then finally burn themselves down to embers. He loved the tall trees that looked down on man and up to God. He loved desert soil, a naked river, an untamed mountain, as the Cherokee had loved them, for they were his blood and bone and sinew. And he loved the cities, the melodious jangle of horns and streetcars and sirens, the shining accomplishment of bridge and building and skyscraper and theater decked in neon. He loved the cities with the deep native pride of the white man. Yes, Will Rogers loved the earth. And next to the earth, he loved the sky. Yes, Will Rogers loved the sky. His ancestors had set out for frontiers on horseback and covered wagons. But the only frontier left for him was the sky. On March 10th of 1935, he wrote,
"I've never been up to that Alaska. Wiley Post went up there this last summer and went hunting in the plain, but I never did get further north than a block north of Main Street in Seattle."
That was it. It was written there in the papers for everyone to see. Will was beginning to hunger after horizons again. Every time a plane went over, he was out in his backyard staring at the sky.
Wonder where that plane's going, Betty?
Well, I think you'd better get on one, Will. You are getting sort of nervous again.
I'd like to take a vacation in Alaska.
Taking off this hour of night. It's almost midnight.
Will Rogers, Wiley Post. August 6th. A week so back, I took off on a little sightseeing trip with Wiley Post. This Alaska's a beautiful country. Juneau, Alaska, August 7th. Well, it was some trip. A 1,000-mile hop from Seattle to Juneau. This new farm colony here in Alaska is having little trouble. It's a great deal easier pioneering for gold than pioneering for spinach. Juneau, Alaska, August 9th. Bad weather.
And laughed and had a bit of fun at everyone's expense, and mostly at his own, and suddenly and swiftly stopped laughing, shocking the air with sudden silence. So it was that the last joke was told, the last words filed away, the chapter completed. Some who had never known him but counted him their friend wept for him. Others stood in quiet disbelief, staring at the sky. Will Rogers dead? Why, Will couldn't die. His words had come like a folk song, fresh from the hearts of the people. His longings were their own longings, made articulate. His people were the granite fibers out of which democracy had been built. And when he spoke, he had spoken for them. Will Rogers dead in an airplane crash in Alaska? Oh, nonsense. He couldn't be. Will Rogers was riding his pony out in the desert.
He come riding in one of these days, still twinkling under that Stetson, still laughing.
And who was he? What did he do? What did he say? What was he that people loved him so?
I met a lot of people, but I never met a man I didn't like.
That's it. That's the whole thing. That's Will Rogers' whole lifetime in one sentence. He threw out those words like a lasso, and he caught America by the heart. He is legend. He is ageless. He is immortal. A legend never dies as long as the people will it to live on.
I met a lot of people, but I never met a man I didn't like.
Now, Mr. Hilton.
Thank you, Will Rogers, for joining us tonight. It was a genuine pleasure for me, Mr. Hilton, and I'd like to thank Mr. Ted DeCorsia for his excellent portrayal of my father, and to you, Mr. Edward Arnold, for telling the story so beautifully.
Well, it was a privilege, I assure you, Will. You know, I knew your father and was one of his great admirers.
The Hallmark Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from the 23rd of February, 1950. And so closes this hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.